my wife in a few months, July 1st, she's going to be starting a new job as the president of Kentucky United Methodist Children's Homes. So as a way to begin to learn about that and to get a little into that world, last night they had a fundraiser at the children's home. And so we went over to that, and it was a nice evening, and the fun part of the evening was they had a silent auction, which was okay, but then they had an actual live auction with fun things for people to bid on. And as you're looking at those things beforehand, they had a football signed by Mark Stoops, it's a UK football, and then they had a basketball signed by John Calipari. And you're looking at those going, wow, that'd be kind of neat. So they start the bidding, and the bidding started beyond where I was even thinking about that would be a possibility. So I was immediately eliminated, but they started the bidding on each of those balls at $300. And so the football went first. Now, if you were to say Kentucky football or basketball state, you would say basketball. But the football did really well. And anytime you have a situation like that, what really drives it is if you make sure that you have not one but two people who want it. There were several people who bid on the football, but it eventually came down to a couple of people. So when it hit about $600 for the football, it was just two people going back and forth. Now, what was funny is that they were both at the next table over from where we were, and one of them was a man who was sitting with his wife, and she sat sort of next to him for a while and just was amused by all of it. But then there came a point where, in order to bid, you're supposed to raise your hand. We noticed that at one point, her hand went over to his. But it didn't stop him. He just started nodding then. And so I went back and forth, and it was kind of amazing that the football eventually went for $1,100 for a signed Mark Stoops football. Then the Calipari basketball, so that you don't have to wonder, did the football actually bring more? I think somebody felt that would be a cosmic imbalance, so that the basketball went for $1,200. I feel like somebody must have bid that just to make sure that the basketball went for more. But as the back and forth was happening on the football, I said, you know what we really need to do is we need to get somebody to go find Mark Stoops really fast and have him sign another football. Because you got two people here who really wanted to help. And of course, anything that came in, those were donated items, and it went to help directly with things related to the children. So, from that story just now, one, I would ask you, what was the story about? What was the point of that story? What did you learn from that story? Okay, so that there was an auction to help children. There was a competition in the bidding.
People are generous.
People are generous. You're drawing very nice, wide conclusions out of this. What specifically do you know that happened? Of anything in the evening, what specifically do you know happened?
A gathering. Somebody won the football.
Right. Somebody got a football, and somebody got a basketball, and they paid $1,100 for the football and $1,200 for the basketball. From me telling you the story, do you have any idea how I got there? I drove, but you would have to infer that. I didn't mention that. Did Julie's father go with us? Did I mention that? No, I didn't give you that detail, so it's hard to know if I don't say. What did we have to eat? We had some great stuff. They had these chefs, like 8 chefs from around Lexington who came and made these incredible dishes. I didn't say anything about that. I left all that out. There was nothing in there about great chefs or about wonderful desserts. And the wonderful desserts part, being a diabetic, I may have left that out intentionally so as not to be questioned about it. But there were wonderful desserts as well. And finally, what was the weather like? There was nothing said about the weather, right? I didn't say anything about the weather, which was okay. It rained a little bit, but it was fine. The thing that, if you had to say, George told us a story in church this morning, the things that you could solidly say as factual things that you know happened was that there was a basketball and there was a football and they were bid on and they did really well and two people went home happy with those and there possibly was a wife who went home a little less happy with her husband. Now, I want you to think of what you would think of as the most important thing that you did yesterday. Just quickly do that inventory in your mind. Think of what's the most important thing, the most memorable thing you did yesterday. Now, of a lot of you, somebody must have done a memorable thing yesterday. So please, somebody tell me, what was the most memorable thing you did yesterday?
Scrubbed my patio, and it's memorable because I'm
sober
from it today.
So you scrubbed your patio. This was important because you can still recall doing it today. Because you feel it. Anyone else have a memorable thing from yesterday?
Call the plumber.
Call the plumber? Was this an emergency situation?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
With the heating unit, so.
Hot
water radio. You don't have hot
water either. Did that work out all right?
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet, okay. But it's in process. All right. I saw a hand, yes.
What a beautiful card from a daughter to a mother.
Read a wonderful card from a daughter to her mother, and that stays with you today. So, in these instances, patio, plumber, card, I'm going to assume that these are not the only things that happened in your lives yesterday. Like, you did some other things besides those things. So, in order for them to tell us these things, what do they have to do? Well, you had to go through in your mind everything that you did, or at least the things that occurred to you that you did, and you had to pick something out. You had to weigh them next to each other and say that in answer to the question, what's the most memorable thing or what's the most important thing, you have to choose things and eliminate other things, right? Like, that's the nature of that task I just gave to you. Like, in order to pick the one thing out, that means there are other things that happen that you are not sharing with us. You told us the most important thing. How do you tell a story? How do you go about telling a story? And in answer to that question, I would say what you do is you make choices. Make choices about what you think is important to what you want to communicate in order to get across the point that you have in mind. And when you make choices about how to tell your story of something that happened, you decide what things are going to be included, what will help you. And then you also, in addition to deciding what will be included, you also have to decide, what am I not going to put in? What doesn't help? What's just like an extra thing? This is a thing that I know I, as a preacher, don't do enough of this, and most of us preachers don't do enough to go back and comb through and say, you know, this may be interesting, but it doesn't do anything to further the where it is I want to go. And in general, if we're going to tell a story effectively, we've got to figure out what we want in and what doesn't go in. And then typically, there is a point that we want to make. So one of the measures that we use for what we're going to put in or what we're going to leave out has to do with what we think will help us to make the point and what will not help us to make the point. So whether the story is funny or sad or serious, you could have an event or have something that happened to you that maybe was all three of those things. Could have been funny in part and sad in another part, but it ended up serious. But you have to decide, how do I want to tell this story? What do I want to communicate with this? And then you may leave out, if you're trying to get to the serious place, you may downplay some of the funny part. Because where you're trying to get is a place where you're touching people's emotions and trying to help them to understand how serious something is. So my point is that you do not put in every detail. You choose, you pick, you are your own editor. Some of those details, again, just don't feel important to you. Others feel very important. Some of them you think, maybe this detail doesn't help at all. Maybe this, if I put this in, it detracts. I have to explain this more than is necessary to get me to where I want to go. Now, I want you to keep all that about how you tell a story and why it's important that we choose some things and don't choose other things. Keep that in mind as we now move into Luke's gospel. As we begin to move towards, for those of you who are reading through the entirety of Luke's gospel, as we visit with Luke right at the beginning of Luke's gospel this morning, since it's short, I want you to listen to those first four verses again with all of that about how you choose to tell a story in mind. So this is the very first four verses of Luke's gospel. Many people have already applied themselves to the task of compiling an account of the events that have been fulfilled among us. They used what the original eyewitnesses and servants of the word handed down to us. Now, after having investigated everything carefully from the beginning, I have also decided to write a carefully ordered account for you, most honorable Theophilus. I want you to have confidence in the soundness of the instruction you have received. If you are a note taker, these next few moments will be gold to you, because I'm just going to shoot some information to you about Luke's gospel. That if you like that kind of thing, you'll find it very interesting. If you don't find this kind of thing very interesting, just hang with me for a couple minutes, because we'll move past it. But I want to share you just a little bit about Luke's gospel. So, first off, the number of gospels. Four gospels: Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Of those four, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, how many of them are by eyewitnesses to the events of the gospels? How many of you think? Anybody vote for four? Anybody vote for three? Two, one. All right, so it's anybody's guess, really. But the best scholarship says that the answer we can be most kind of certain about would be one. One. John. John being a disciple. We think that the Gospel of John is by John the disciple. Now, that's always open to question, but that's what the general thinking and agreement is. Now, Matthew, also named for a disciple, but there's more question there about whether that's actually Matthew who wrote that, or whether that's somebody who put the name Matthew onto their work. So there's less certainty there. Then Mark and Luke, neither of them are eyewitnesses to the events, as far as we can tell. But they are people we know from Scripture. So the general consensus is that Mark is actually a guy named John Mark. And he was a companion of Paul, and he was also a companion of Peter. So he traveled in good circles. And if you're with both Peter and with Paul, you clearly have access to stories to where you know where much of his material could have come from. So that's Mark, we believe. Then Luke, who's our subject, Luke is most likely a companion of Paul. Paul talks about him in more than one place, mentions him. And you can begin to put together some pieces of information if it turns out that Luke is actually the Luke of Luke's gospel. One of the things that Paul tells us, there's one detail about him that Paul mentions to us, that Luke's profession, anybody know what Luke did? Luke's a doctor. And that makes a difference because Luke sometimes talks in ways that a doctor would talk. As an example, when you have a healing miracle, if you have the same miracle portrayed in another gospel and Luke, the one that's more likely to give you a detailed account of it is Luke, because Luke is really interested in healing, being a doctor. So Luke also is the only one of the four. If you go through and read the introduction to each of the four gospels, Luke is the only one with a formal introduction like the one we read here. by formal introduction, I mean, he's the only one who says, here's what I'm trying to do. Here's what I want to accomplish with this. And not only here's what I want to do, but here's how I did it. And then he says, I gathered together information and I investigated. That is to say, I talked to people. Now, I want you to think about that. I talked to people. I investigated what that could mean. If you get over into the second chapter of Luke, there's a verse where after it talks about the shepherds coming and it talks about the birth of Christ and all that amazing event, there's a verse that says, Mary pondered these things in her heart. How would you know something like that? Well, I would argue that one way you might know something like that would be that you talked to Mary. Like maybe you went to Mary, if you're Luke, and said, tell me about anything you can remember. And you had a conversation about it. So it's not somebody saying, I think Mary pondered something in her heart. It's somebody actually having a conversation with an eyewitness to the event and interviewing them, is trying to draw as many of the facts and then bringing them together into a story. So he had his own conversations with eyewitnesses. Another thing about Luke. Luke is the author not just of the book of Luke. Luke is also the author of the book of Acts. So we believe that Acts is basically the sequel to Luke. And that Luke tells the story of Christ and Acts tells the story of the early church. But you will find that many of the themes that begin in Luke continue and are enhanced in the book of Acts. And if you look at that beginning again, we just read from the beginning of the book of Luke, and it talked about what he was writing. It said he was writing to a person called Theophilus. If you go to the beginning of the book of Acts, you will find a similar introduction, and you will find a similar greeting to Theophilus. This is for you, Theophilus. Now, Theophilus, who's Theophilus? Theophilus could be a person. So it could be a Roman. Maybe he was sending an account of what happened to a person named Theophilus. It could also be just a general word meant to be addressed to lovers of God. Because the word Theophilus, in addition to being possibly a name, also means lover of God. So you could be Theophilus. Whoever the recipient of Luke as a gospel is could indeed be Theophilus because they may be a lover of God who's seeking to know more about God. He does not tell us in his gospel everything about Jesus. He makes decisions about what he's going to do. He says it is a carefully ordered account. A carefully ordered account. Who's making those decisions? Luke is. Luke's deciding, I'm going to tell them this, but I don't need to tell them this. And I will tell them this, but not that. So he chooses what he thinks are the most pertinent, the most interesting bits to make his points. So we've mentioned that he traveled with Paul. And I will tell you that one of Paul's major accomplishments, most of us probably have some awareness of this, but if we said, what did Paul do? How did Paul make a difference? Paul's the guy who turned Christianity from a Jewish sect into a world religion. And he did this by moving beyond the Jewish community and branching Christianity out to the Gentiles, which is to say non-Jews. So that would be us, the non-Gentile world. And that's what Paul does. Well, Luke traveled with Paul, and as you read through Luke and then Acts, you're going to find Luke does a similar thing. Of all the Gospels, Luke's the one that has the most focus beyond just the immediate community, the most focus on this is not just a Jewish sect, but this is a world movement. This is larger than just the Jewish world. It involves the Gentiles as well. Now, how would that show up? Like, how do you know I'm just not making stuff up there? Like, how does that play out? So, as an example, familiar with the parable of the Good Samaritan? Like, one of the most famous, if not the most famous, of Jesus' parables. the story of this guy who gets robbed, beaten, and left alongside the road, and then two priests go by, and then a Samaritan goes by. And a Samaritan is like the last person who would help, but that's the one who helps. And it's a story about sort of looking beyond the obvious and an inclusive worldview. And guess which gospel is the only one that has that story? Luke. It makes sense that Luke is the one who shares that with us, because Luke is looking to help us to understand that this is larger and bigger than we can imagine. I told you about Luke being a doctor. He uses the language of a doctor in places. And in addition to using language of a doctor, he again has that interest in healing and what actually is happening there. And we'll include those stories with more detail than the others. A commentator named William Barclay, I want to share just like five themes that emerge in Luke's gospel and ask you to be looking for these if you're reading through, or watch for them as we explore Luke for the next several weeks on Sunday mornings. Luke is about prayer. Luke doesn't say prayer is important. Luke shows us again and again and again Jesus at prayer, and Jesus talking about prayer and attributing good things happening to prayer. And not good things happening in that you got a new car, but them being able to be effective, the disciples being able to carry out effective ministry, prayer. And so we will see prayer again and again. We will see praise. We will see God praised all throughout the Gospel of Luke. For the Presbyterian women, for the women of the church, for women who are the backbone of many churches, Luke is the Gospel of women. Not that you won't find women in other Gospels, but you will find them more in Luke than in the other Gospels. And you will find their stories lifted out more. And just a few of the names, you will find Mary, and you will find Elizabeth, and you will find Anna, and you will find Mary Magdalene. And then you will find Jesus interacting with different women in different circumstances, all in a way that elevates women to places where the culture at that time, you would say, taken as a whole, this is kind of unusual. This is different, that this would be something that would happen, but focuses on that piece of Jesus' ministry. The universal gospel, again, accessible to all people. I told you about the Good Samaritan, another piece of this. Matthew has a genealogy where he goes back to the beginning and traces Jesus' genealogy up until Jesus is born. Matthew begins his genealogy with Abraham. Abraham, because Abraham is at the head of the Jewish faith. Luke has a genealogy as well, but he doesn't begin his with Abraham. Do you know where Luke begins his genealogy? Adam. Not the head of the Jewish faith, but the head of everything, like the first person. So you see, that's a universal sort of thing. We're all in that family. He's not talking about the Jewish family. He's talking about the world family, going back to Adam. Now, you might be saying, I hope you're saying, this is interesting. I hope that's happening. But you might also be saying, this is interesting, but this is not school. So why exactly are we doing this? What's all this information about? Because it has a feel of school a little bit. What you might be asking is, this is church, this is worship, this is supposed to be about furthering my faith journey. So how does knowing these facts about things, how does this enhance my faith journey? What difference does it make? And I would answer that this way. We have a couple of responsibilities in relationship to the good news. We have a couple of responsibilities. One is simply to listen to it, to be open to it, to have our ears open, our hearts open, our minds open, to listen to it, to listen for it. How is God speaking to us? And to get as tuned in to what God is saying to us as we can be. How is God speaking to us specifically through this gospel? What's going on? And as we listen to it, listening with ears, to have that expectancy of hearing the gospel for us today. Jesus will say, those who have ears, let them hear. That's just not Jesus saying, I'm through with that story, so bless y'all. He's saying, those who have ears, let them hear. That was important. Think about that. Listen to that. A shorter way of saying all that might be to say, we are not the place where the gospel goes to die. We are not supposed to be the place where the gospel ends up, where it stops. We are a way station. We are recipients of the gospel, but then a joyous response to the gospel, which means we actually heard it, would be that we can't keep it. We want to pass it along. We want to share it with other people. So now we full circle back to the conversation we began with about stories and how we tell stories. And what I would really encourage, and what I think an opportunity that we have anytime we take a single gospel like this, is rather than try to say, well, I know this story from over there, and I know this one from over here, and this adds into it, act like you know nothing about any of it. And focus only on what you're told by the particular gospel writer you're with. So what has Luke told me? Ask yourself that question. Let Luke teach you. Let Luke be your instructor. And one of the ways that we are instructed, one of the ways we learn, we see this with the disciples and Jesus, is ask Luke questions. You read a story in Luke. Think about the story. Think what you think Luke is trying to communicate to you, but ask Luke questions about what Luke has shared with you. If we can agree that Luke didn't tell us everything that he knew, that he left some of it on the editing room floor and told us the parts that he thought were important, then it's a great question to when you've read a particular passage, to say, why did he tell us this? What's going on that Luke is trying to communicate with this story? And why did he give it to us in the order that he does? Because kind of an advanced technique here is that when you find a passage, you find a story, a fun thing is to go see, do I see this in Mark? Do I see this in Matthew? And how do they tell the story if they have it? And you can begin to differentiate and say, okay, why did Luke put this, but these others don't have this? What's Luke trying to tell me? What details does he put in? And then ask yourself, so if I was standing there and I was listening to Jesus say this, or I was watching Jesus perform this miracle, what is missing that he must have seen, or that whoever's telling him about this must have seen, that I would have wanted him to include? Which is to say, when Luke portrays a story to you, oftentimes people will ask questions in Bible studies like, well, why did they do this? That's a great question. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to answer that question, but that's a great way to get at the text, is to ask, why are they telling me this, but not telling me this other thing that they probably could have told me? Why do you think Luke felt like that wasn't something that he wanted to cover? For some people, this is an important thing to think about as you're reading through a gospel. Brayden and Jude and I talked about this morning as we were looking through the gospels. But one of the gospels we were looking at quoted the Old Testament. Do you know what they called the Old Testament at that time? The Bible. They called it Scripture. There wasn't a New Testament. The stuff that we were reading about in the New Testament doesn't exist at that point, except as it's happening. And then somebody writes it down, and eventually. But at that time, you don't have four gospels running around necessarily. You may have somebody who's written a gospel and it's over here, but it's not gotten to your community. And then one day somebody says, have you seen this Luke thing? And so you start to read, and the whole thing is new and fresh, and it's like so incredible that it presses your ability to believe, but there's something about it that rings true. For some people, Luke's gospel is their first exposure ever to hearing God's good news. Imagine that you're receiving it in that way, and that what you're reading, you're encountering the first time. And how do you respond? How do you respond to that? The Gospels are life-changing. The Gospels are life-giving. Gospels are the story of Jesus Christ. And that story is a gift to us that has now made its way into our heads, and more importantly, has made its way into our hearts. What choices will we make? Because here's the thing. We said, why is this important? And why is it important to think about all these things? Well, Luke made choices. Luke makes decisions. Luke decided how he was going to tell the story. Guess what you have to do? You have to make decisions. You have to make choices. You have to decide how you are going to share the story. Because you may well encounter someone, and this is hard for us to imagine at times, but you may encounter someone where you are the one who is delivering the good news of the gospel for the first time. How do you do it? How is it appropriate in whatever context that we're talking about that you enter into that? And what choices do you make? What is the thing that you need to share? And what's the thing that maybe isn't the thing right at that moment? What's essential? And what speaks to that moment? And what's authentic coming from you? All those things are important. How will we be folks who share God's good news? What I will invite you to do now through the Sunday of Pentecost is to keep asking that question, to keep engaging the text, and let Dr. Luke instruct us. Thanks be to God. Amen.